The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
From Los Angeles. Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Lots to cover today. It is Monday, so we might as well let you know. Earth is coming to an end, and Stephen Hawking says we should all get off the planet ASAP. If I could, Stephen, believe me, after the last 10 years, I would get off this planet. We'll have more on that. Also, Bill Nye, the science guy, has one of his comedy writers write something really, really funny this weekend. And Seattle's minimum wage hike. According to the University of Washington, it's not working. And you won't believe why. And we begin with Trump Care. What is going to happen in the Senate with the Obamacare repeal and replace, which it's neither? We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. From Los Angeles, welcome to the program. So glad that you are here today. I want to read from Mike Lee's post on Medium, which is a website where I guess smart people go. That's why I've never been. It's a place where you can actually write, and it's made for people who can actually read more than 40 seconds at a time. And he is taking apart piece by piece why Trump Care is not better. And I want to share it with you. The missing ingredient in Trump Care, humility. No, the Senate health care bill released yesterday does not repeal Obamacare. It doesn't even significantly reform American health care. It does cut taxes. It bails out the insurance company. It props up Obamacare through the next election. It lays out plans to slow Medicaid spending beginning in 2025, which probably won't happen. And it leaves in place the ham-fisted federal regulations that have driven up family health insurance premiums by 140% since Obamacare was implemented. Now, I just want to spend a second on that. Have you heard the media or anybody actually quote that statistic? We all know that our health care insurance premiums has gone through the roof. We all know that we can't afford it. We all know that there are places in the country now where you only have two options, Obamacare or one other insurance program. We all know this has happened. But have you heard them quote the stat that it is up 140%? That's outrageous. And if we were ringing that bell, I think maybe more people would say, wait a minute. This has to be repealed. As the bill is currently drafted, writes Mike Lee, I won't vote for it. On the other hand, I understand the opportunity Republicans have right now to help Americans get better, more affordable coverage. That's why I joined the Senate Working Group on Healthcare Reform with an open mind. I knew then, as I know now, that as one of the most conservative Republican senators, I would have to compromise with the least conservative Republican senators to get something done. And compromise, I have. At the beginning of this process, I wanted a full repeal of Obamacare. Despite campaigning on that very thing for 8 years, my Republican colleagues have disagreed. What is it going to be like in 18 or 2020? Think of 2020. You're going to be running the Democrats, who are going to be having the biggest fight over socialism ever, running against the GOP and a president who has just reneged on every single promise they gave. Actually, the president hasn't, but the Republicans have just reneged on 9 years of promises to the American people. And if it has gone up 141%, and we know that it's collapsing on itself, what do you think it's going to be like in 3 or 4 years? Better? So I called for a partial repeal, says Mike Lee, like we passed in 2015, which conservatives were promised by our leaders in January. A partial repeal would at least force Congress to start over on a new system that could work better. But again, no. So then I advocated repealing Obamacare's regulations, which have been the primary drivers of spiking premiums. I repeated this suggestion at every single meeting of the working group and at every members' lunch for several weeks. Yet, when the Better Care Reconciliation Act was unveiled yesterday, the core of Obamacare regulations were largely untouched. Remember, it's the regulations that made it go up 141%. Far short of repeal, the Senate bill keeps the Democrats' broken system intact, just with less spending on the poor to pay for corporate bailouts and tax cuts. Boy, how do you think they're going to fare in 2020 with just that fact? With just the fact that they did get tax cuts and they reduced things on the poor, but they gave those reductions not to the American people, but they gave them to wealthy corporations. How's that going to go? Yet for all of that, I have not closed the door on voting for on some version of this in the end. Conservatives have compromised on not repealing, on spending levels, tax cuts, subsidies, corporate bailouts, Medicaid, and the Obamacare regulations. That is, on every substantive question in the bill. I have conceded to my moderate colleagues on all of the above. Now I only ask that the bill be amended to include an opt-out provision for states or even just for individuals. The reasons Americans are divided about health care, like so many issues today, is that we don't know exactly how to fix it. Politicians hate to admit it. Partisans pretend otherwise, but it's true. And history teaches us that when we don't know how to solve a problem, the best thing to do is to experiment. We should test different ideas through cooperatives, bottom-up, trial and error process, rather than imposing a top-down partisan power play that disrupts the lives of hundreds of millions of people at a time. What a concept. 8 years ago, Democrats created a one-size-fit-all national healthcare system, and it's collapsing around us. They couldn't even make the website work. Why do Republicans, who are supposedly skeptical of a government miracle working, expect our one-size-fits-all scheme to work any better? The only hope for actually solving the deep, challenging problems in our healthcare system is to let the people try out approaches other than the ones a few dozen politicians might think up inside of the D.C. bubble. And so, for all of my frustrations about the process and the disagreements with the details of BCRA, I would still be willing to vote for it if it allowed states and or individuals to opt out of the Obamacare system free and clear to experiment with different forms of insurance, benefits package, care provision options, etc. Liberal states might try a single-payer system, while conservatives might emphasize healthcare savings accounts. Some people embrace association health care plans or so-called MediShare ministry models. My guess is different approaches will work for different people in different places, just like everything else in life. The only way to find out what does work is to find out what doesn't. We know that pre-Obamacare system was breaking down. We now know that Obamacare is failing as well. I doubt this system will fare much better, or that the next Pelosi-Sanders-Warren scheme Democrats will cook up will be worse. At some point, Washington elites might at least entertain the possibility that we don't have all the answers in Washington. I think right now, with President Trump's shocking upset of the establishment still fresh in their minds, it'd be a good time for Congress to add new ingredients to the legislative sausage, a dash of humility. To win my vote, the Republican health care bill must create a little space for states and individuals to sidestep Washington's arrogant incompetence to see if they can do better. Recent history suggests Washington couldn't do worse. Back in a second with more on this. But first, our commercial sponsor this hour is Simply Safe. Millions get home security so they feel safe at night. It's important and the good thing to do. But the truth is, most burglaries happen during the day when you're at work. I think there's something to this, though. I don't know if we are worried as much about our stuff as we are worried about our families. When we're home, I care much more about our security in our house than I do when I'm away. I want my family protected. And that's why Simply Safe Home Security has a completely wireless system that is easy to install. It will watch over your house when you're all gone, because most burglaries actually happen in the middle of the day. We think about it at night. Why would they want to confront somebody that's home? So they break in during the day. So you're safe with Simply Safe. And when you're at home with the kids and you're sleeping, you're completely safe there as well. With SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now, SimplySafeBeck.com. You can get the security system that fits your family. It's an unbelievable price, and you're going to be able to install it yourself. There's no wiring or anything else. You take it out of the box, and within literally 30 minutes, you are connected and ready to go with a secure home. Completely wireless. It's brand new technology. It is the way to protect your family. SimplySafeBeck.com. Get a 10% discount now at SimplySafeBeck.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Glad that you are here. This Senate bill was mainly drafted by Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, who unveiled it just so we could vote quickly this week and then break for the 4th of July and watch the fireworks and maybe forget that Congress just screwed us all. 140% increase in our premiums since Obamacare has passed, and this does nothing to reduce the pressure on us, the individuals. Who is, Stu, are you keeping count of the Senate senators? There's five now.
Yeah.
That are saying that they may not do it.
Yeah, I you could probably go to six on that, too, as Susan Collins sort of indicated that she may not vote for it, too.
She said, it's hard for me to see this bill passing this week. We could well be in for an all-nighter a couple of nights this week.
Yeah, so you could kind of take hers as, you know, you can't really tell, but she is showing some hesitancy to support it, I guess, is the way you could put that.
Right.
But the other five are Mike Lee, as you pointed out last break. When his
now,
break-
you were, we were talking before we went on the air, and you said you thought that he wasn't really out, and he isn't out unless there's an opt-out for the states or the individuals. Do you see that even a possibility? That guts the whole thing.
I don't think they're going to do it. However, yeah, he is keeping it open. I think it's interesting for him to say, really what I took from that Mike Lee thing is, look, we tried really hard. We didn't get any of the stuff we were supposed to get. All the things that we promised didn't come true. At least give us a chance for states to try to do something better. Like, I will vote for it. I'll swallow all this nonsense. Just give the states an opportunity so some of them can try something better and we can at least show a path to success.
So here's the only problem with this, and I agree with him. I mean, that seems reasonable to me. You want to keep your bloated thing, then at least give a few states the option or the individual to get out of that thing. You know, I don't know how the individual works, but I love the idea of states. But the problem is that, for instance, all of our pensions are collapsing on us right now. I really want to talk to Governor Mike Bevin this week if we can.
Or Matt Bevin, one of that. Or Matt, either Bevin brother would be good.
Yeah, that would be good. Sorry, Matt. Governor Bevin. He's getting some heat now because he's making risky investments, they say, in with hedge funds to try to be able to fix their pension fund. They are the most, this is the worst pension, apparently, in the country. It's 20% underfunded. And it's completely falling apart. Now, I don't know how you could be worse than Illinois, which Illinois is now 100% of every tax dollar that comes in Illinois has to go to the court mandated must pay pensions. So this is piling up on our states as it is. We're not going to have the money to be able to do anything. And what's going to happen? You let some states out of it. It'll be states like Utah. It'll be states like Texas, probably places like Wyoming that will say, I'm not in. And it will be all of the places like Illinois, New York, California that will say, yes, we need Obamacare. Well, they're going to collapse, and then we're going to be stuck with the bill. Because if you don't think the United States is going to be stuck with the pension bill from Illinois and Kentucky and every place else, you're fooling yourself. So what happens? Serious question.
No. Oh, well, sure. You didn't know that? Yeah. Well, I thought we were working in that world already. it's a massive problem. To finish that list, by the way, it was Lee, Cruz, Johnson from Wisconsin, Rand Paul. I mentioned Susan Collins and Heller from Nevada is the other one of the six that are right now sort of indicating potential no votes.
Ron Johnson's didn't say that Mike Lee is coming out and saying no unless you do this one thing. Ron Johnson just said there's no way we should be voting on this. Quote, no way we should be voting on this. No way. I have a hard time believing Wisconsin's constituents or even myself have enough time to properly evaluate this for me and my vote for a motion to proceed. So he's just saying they're just jamming it down our throats and no thank you.
Yeah, and it's one thing to toss out a comment about, okay, well, this is coming too fast. You feel like a lot of the times people make those sorts of complaints and then come around in the end. He also wrote an extensive op-ed in the New York Times today about how much he doesn't like the proposal. So it's not just that he's saying, well, we shouldn't vote on it this week. He's listing out a lot of pretty significant problems with it. And, you know, if you have Susan Collins and Ted Cruz who are showing some sort of opposition to this and Mike Lee, you're having problems on both sides, which is the same issue they had in the House. Of course, as we all know, the House wound up getting over those things eventually. So they may wind up passing this thing, but it's not going to be easy. It is going to be it's going to be very difficult for them to get this done, especially this week.
I'm afraid that if they don't get it done, Donald Trump scraps the whole thing and we have a single payer system.
That's quite a leap. He obviously has talked about that many times.
He's promised it and said that that's what he wants. I mean, let's go back to the original Obamacare specialist that said, people say this is a Trojan horse. Well, it is. It's right there. And they were talking about a Trojan horse that it's going to collapse and then we'll have a single payer system. And that's what Donald Trump has advocated for. That this is scrapped and repealed, and then we get a system that is basic, universal, single-payer health care that the government pays for all of it. He said he's willing to lose votes on that. He repeated that over and over again. And then when this bill came out, he said it was too mean.
And he said throw more money into it.
Right. I mean, so when Obamacare collapses, which it will, Mike Lee is saying, let's use this time to find out what will work. And if somebody wants to try a single payer system out, try it. It's going to end up like Massachusetts, but try it. We're going to try something different in another state. And that's the way it should be. But if it collapses, and it collapses without any experimentation anyplace else, I can guarantee you the Republicans and the Democrats are going to go for a failed single-payer system because they're still operating like it's 1956. Back in just a second.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
A very good friend of the program and one of the more decent men I know, Riaz Batal, is joining us now. Riaz has been away for a while and been out of the country, had a new baby, has been spending time with his family, and unfortunately has lost his dear father here recently. Riaz, how you holding up, brother?
I'm okay. Hi, Glenn. Nice to hear your voice. Hello.
Good to hear you. Good to hear you. I wanted to talk to you today a little bit, Riaz, about, you know, we had a kind of a nice conversation over the last week about our dads.
Yeah.
And losing your dad and what that feels like. It's a weird thing that never seems to go away.
It's like a free fall of sadness and emotion. It's so visceral. It's so hard to explain. When we were going back and forth, it was one of those things that I'm like, if you've been through it, you sort of sense it. It's intense.
Yeah, and it's strange because it at least with me, and I don't know about anybody else, but at least with me, the memories of my mother and my father have changed, and they change as I get older, and it's weird. Depending on which part of them you want to focus on, they become either better or worse than they really were.
Fascinating. I mean, yeah. Because it's so recent. It's, you know, less than 2-3 weeks. You know, when we were talking, I couldn't imagine that memory adjusting and changing. But, you know, I'm only a couple weeks in, so I imagine life is long. It will.
Yeah, you really want to write down everything you knew about your dad, because it will change and you'll forget some things.
I started yesterday, per your advice. I actually did. I started writing down all the memories, good, bad, all that, to sort of keep it fresh where it is now and notice how it changes over time.
Yeah. So, Riaz, your dad was a doctor, and he was a doctor on three continents.
Correct.
With three different systems of medicine, and you and I were also going back and forth on healthcare, and you are, you know, a lefty or a liberal, if you will, but you're also the guy who went up to Alaska during the Trump campaign, and all of your friends were saying, how could these people ever vote for Trump? And as you looked at it, you went up to Alaska and you saw the suffering of people in the country and said, they're afraid they're losing everything, and they don't have the money to be able to survive in this if it continues this way.
Yeah, yeah. Part of the quest of what do I not know out there? What do I think I know, but I not know? And you'd have to be pretty deaf to not be able to hear that healthcare is broken, and I don't know anyone, if you were to ask people to raise their hands, would raise their hand and say, yep, it's working for me. So it was fascinating as I was sitting in the aftermath of my father's death and talking to his secretaries, Bernie and Ruth, who'd been with him for 20, 30 years, about the patient community, because he's been there for 40-plus years, so those patients are going to feel the change. And as we discussed that patient community of Edgewood, Maryland, I realized it's very much a microcosm of what's happened in America. And what's fascinating is the way my dad adapted his practice and the practice of medicine to the changing economic times. Edgewood, Maryland is a blue-collar town. And over the past 40 years, it has systematically decreased its income. I mean, jobs went out. I remember factories closing when I was a teenager. But people still got sick, and people still slipped and fell. And so what happened when they lost their jobs, they lost their income, they lost their insurance, but they still got sick. And they went to my dad. And my dad created this island. You know, and it's not that uncommon for a doctor to just want to practice medicine and say, to hell with the insurance and the pre-approvals and for a doctor,
I think most doctors are like that.
Yes.
Most doctors just
hate the system. They want to treat people, and they hate the system.
You go through 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of medical school. You end up with this enormous amount of debt, and you come out, and you cannot practice medicine freely. You cannot make decisions autonomously between you and your patient that's sitting in front of you bleeding. You have to go consult with people who have nothing to do with that patient dynamic. And that's infuriating to doctors. It's infuriating to patients. So, and so what I'm really angry about these days is the business of the politics of healthcare. There is enough money out there, Glenn, to cover us all. I saw patients come to my father's house in the 1970s when we had it out of our garage. To treat patients on a day-to-day basis is not that expensive. Why does it become so prohibitive? Why can the patient not receive the care, the doctor not treat? Where is the money going?
So, Riaz, here's part of the problem. If I am spending somebody else's money, let me say this carefully. One of the problems is with the employer insurance and you not having to shop around. When we are responsible for our own money, when somebody says to us, hey, I can get you in for a CAT scan right here, right now, and I'm just making numbers up, $1,000, or you can drive in Dallas, there's a place you can drive from my house, there's one that you can drive just down the street, you'll have to make an appointment, you'll get it by tomorrow, but it's not right here, and it's half the cost. Same thing, just half the cost.
Which shows the fluctuation of pricing that has nothing to do with the actual administration of medicine.
Well, convenience, I mean, one thing is convenience, and also these companies being able to gouge your eyes out, because most people, they don't care about the price, because it's not them paying for it. Mm-hmm. And so when you remove the responsibility of, wait a minute, it's my money, I'm going to have to pay for it, then you, for instance, with home insurance, I could file, my home was struck by lightning this weekend.
I was looking to that, Glenn, while you're struck by lightning.
I know. Wait a minute. What are you saying there? So it was struck by lightning. And I said to my wife, she was gone and she, you know, worked with her dad, who's an insurance agent. And I'm like, you know, blew the TV, blew the system, you know, blew a whole bunch of stuff. And she said, well, we have a huge deductible. And I thought, oh, crap, we do, don't we? Oh, it's not free anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you start to now care. Wait a minute. Who did I call? Let's make sure we're pricing this the right way. And so there is a difference, and it's the free market system. And Washington is taking it even further. They're just making deals with the government or with the insurance companies and with all the people who are getting rich, including them.
So my father was, you know, in the 1970s and 80s, was a medical director of a hospital, a small hospital in this area. And I watched as a kid as the board, he ran all the decisions of this hospital, who needed what, when they needed it, how long they'd stay. Then eventually there was one MBA, then two MBAs, and then eventually there were no doctors represented. So everything we're talking about, whether it's two-party system, single-party system, the government, insurance, pre-approvals, none of that has anything to do with you and your doctor. And to me, what my father brought, having trained in Karachi, Pakistan, in London, England, was a very different perspective that you treat first your physician, and then the billing comes next. And what he did is said, you're sick, you come in, and then you go to billing. And what happened is it became so personal that Ruth or Bernie would say to Mr. Johnson, okay, here's what happened, and Mr. Johnson would say, I don't have my job, I don't have insurance, but I can pay $40, and they would be like, okay, because we know in healthcare, that's better than nothing. And my father would just say, the personal responsibility of a physician to treat is the joy of his life. And at a certain point, working at the hospital, it was so bureaucratic with the lawyers and the MBAs and the lobbyists in a small hospital that he actually left the hospital, built his own surgical center, and said, I cannot practice medicine appropriately in the way it works.
What you're asking for, though, is a return to common sense and a return to trust in neighbors. I'm reading this book called Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me, and it talks about the why we don't say I'm sorry. And it gets to this one place about doctors, and they track doctors in a study of those who said, wow, I made a huge mistake, all the way to a doctor who came out of surgery. The patient dies and he says, look, I don't know what the autopsy is going to show. I don't know. There'll be an investigation. But your husband died, and I believe it was my fault. And they were angry, and he said, look, I didn't have any reason to suspect this, but I just really feel like I should have caught that. And I just want you to know I take responsibility. The doctors that say the truth are the least likely to be sued. But because of the system that has been set up by the attorneys and everything else, nobody's having real conversations with each other.
And that is the problem. And so in this tiny patient community of Edgewood, they were able to create this walk-in medical center, nothing fancy, where neighbors walked in up to 3-4 generations and were treated. And to me, in my father was diagnosed with cancer and was dead in seven weeks, literally. I would say we spent 80% of our time trying to navigate insurance. Was this pre-approved? Was this equipment sent? And my father, who treated 250,000 patients over the course of his life, we could not get a bed for him to ease his pain because we could not track down the paperwork. So his last 5 days of his life, he sat in pain because the four of us, I'm a producer, my sister's a lawyer, my other sister's a physician with her own practice, and my husband manages healthcare. The four of us could not navigate the system. And each day my father sat there in pain, and we said, I think the bed's arriving today. I called the office. I called the home health. I called the person. All we did was manage it. And I'm thinking, after he's dead and I'm standing there near the grave, and I'm like, how can this continue? How can a person get sick and go to their doctor and 4,000 people and 10 million letters will go on that has nothing to do with that dynamic?
I have about two minutes. I can you talk a little bit about the off-the-grid medicine that you saw in Alaska?
So in Alaska, when I was there, I saw in the local paper that they actually were advertising, doctors were coming and setting up, basically bundling your health care, saying people are not going to doctor's offices because they don't have insurance and money. But you cannot avoid your own health. And so these doctors would come roving through these small towns and say, look, I'll do it for this much cash. And I think at a certain point, this is true of all we're discussing, bringing it bottom up. We need to bring it back to basics. You and your doctor need to decide what is best for you and how to pay for it.
So
they say one-third is going to policy and bureaucracy. That's insane.
So Mike Lease, the senator, the most conservative senator, or one of them, just wrote an op-ed and said, look, I'll sign on. This is not going to fix anything. It's already premiums from Obamacare are up 140%. There's nothing in this Trump care that's going to make that any better. He said, I'll sign on, but only if you let states opt out and come up with their own thing. He said, because I believe the people of the country will figure it out in their own way if you just leave them alone. Do you agree with that?
I believe it is so broken right now, I do not know how to fix it. But I know that people will still slip and fall. They will still feel unwell on a Monday morning, and they need to go to their doctor. So I don't know what D.C. or politicians or insurance are going to do with their multi-billion dollar lobby. But I really encourage people, if they're sick, to go to their local physician and say, here's what's going on. This is my life. The insurance companies have removed that ability to talk to your doctor and vice versa about the fact that, hey, I'm sick, but I don't have money. How can I be treated? And there's money for all of us to be cared for. But the business of politics of healthcare is absorbing it all.
Riaz, always good to talk to you. And I'm so sorry for the loss of your father.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
God bless you. We'll see you soon. Thank
Bye,
you.
Glenn.
Bye-bye. Riaz Patel. I know that in Texas, this is the feeling of many of the doctors of, you know what, I'm just pulling out of the system and I'll just deal with it myself. I personally think that as we get closer to universal single payer system, those doctors are going to be told you can't do that. But that is the solution. Leave people alone and they will work it out on the most basic level. Now, maybe they won't in the big cities, so the cities do something else, but they will around the rest of the country. Now this, ever wonder what hackers do with your stolen data? Study found that thieves use personal data in an average of 9 minutes from the time they have their hands on it. They grab it and 9 minutes later, they're using it. They go after credit card numbers first, then they attempt online transactions for less than $10. And if they can get away with it with $10, then they start to do more and more damage. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. LifeLock, they detect a wide range of identity threats. And if they detect that your information has been taken, they will send you an alert. Are you trying to make this $10 purchase? Did you just sign up for this? If you say no, they know there's a problem. And a U.S.-based restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but they are the best. LifeLock, the best anti-identity theft protection available. Membership start at $9.99 a month plus a sales tax. Visit LifeLock.com/Beck or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. Get 10% off now at 1-800-LIFELOCK. LifeLock.com/Beck.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. So, Stu, when are they suspecting that they are going to vote?
Oh, like in a minute. I mean, they're saying this week, right? I mean, which seems completely ridiculous.
Yeah, they're going to get right on it.
They want to get on it. I think you're right. Your July 4th weekend sort of analysis is, you know, hey, people are not going to be really thinking about it. It's going to happen. If you remember, Obamacare was passed on Christmas Eve, was it?
Yeah,
or Christmas?
Yeah.
So this is standard practice for these guys.
Yeah. Remember, it happened not just on Obamacare. It happened on a lot of these things that Obama passed. If I remember right, it was always right before a major holiday that nobody was paying attention. And they would pass these things, and by the time you got back to work, it was just old news.
Right. I mean, go back to even George W. Bush, who passed the limitations on fluorescent or regular light bulbs.
That happened
before Christmas as well, or right after Christmas.
Yeah, it was right. It was like New Year's Eve or something like that.
Yeah, they do this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So this would be standard practice here. I mean, there's going to have to be a lot of changes if they're going to want to get it passed, though.
Is Brad Thor on with us?
Yeah.
Next?
He's on, I think he's hour three today.
Hour three. Brad Thor is joining us. Brad Thor is, let's say, never boring, always controversial, and he's got a new book out. We'll talk to Brad Thor coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Lots of tweets this weekend about crazy Bernie Sanders. There is a reason for that. Also, why did the American teenager in North Korea die? Did he contract some bug, some virus from something he ate? Or was he beaten to death? We now have some details, and it certainly requires a response from the United States. What that response is, God help us all, I don't know. And summer jobs. Your first summer job. Kids aren't working now. We'll give you the stats, and they're pretty remarkable. And the truth behind the $15 minimum wage in Seattle, according to the University of Washington. You are not going to believe what they said. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, one of the most heartbreaking things that I have as a dad is the memory of what this country used to be like and the knowledge now that if you were born anywhere from 1998, 1995, really, to today, you have no memory at all of what this country was like before September 11th. September 11th changed absolutely everything. The Clinton administration was the beginning of this nastiness that was just went beyond where we started pitting against each other if you were a liberal or a conservative. If you voted for this guy, you were part of the problem. I don't remember that when I was a kid. I posted something this weekend on Facebook about leadership. And honestly, it was something for me. It was something that I've been really trying to study and try to be a better leader at my home and also at the office. It had nothing to do with politics. And man, it just set everybody off. The liberals and the conservatives were just screaming at each other. And I wrote in the comment section, when did we become this? When did politics become absolutely everything? When did that happen to us? It's summer. Do you remember what summer was like when you were a kid? The last day of school? You remember the last week? All you did was just look outside. And there was just this really great feeling of that butterfly in your stomach, that excitement for what's about to happen. We might have butterflies in our stomach now, but it's more of a, I think I'm going to vomit feeling when we're thinking about what might happen. Back then, it was just excitement. And then when that bell rang, that last bell rang, and you said goodbye to your teacher, and you knew you were graduating to another class just down the hall, and you were a bigger kid now, it was like being freed. Suddenly you had no obligations, nothing jamming up your days, nothing to force you to bed early every night. And the next 3 months seemed like a year or a decade. I look back at my childhood and it is the summers that I really remember. It's not the school days, at least in early childhood. It is the summer that marked you, and every summer was different and more exciting. It's different than it is now because we weren't restricted as much. Our parents weren't freaking out that somebody might, invite us into the house, eat us, and lock the rest of the remains up in their freezer. It was simpler times. We didn't worry about the cannibal down the street. And the whole town was fair game for us. We would get our friends together and we'd leave early in the morning. Mom would just say, be home for dinner. And then after dinner, it would be just get home before the streetlights go out. Well, the streetlights don't go out anymore. Didn't happen until 10 o'clock sometimes where I lived up in the north. Streetlights wouldn't come on till very, very late. As I got up in the morning, it would be freezing cold in my room because up in the Pacific Northwest, it can get down to 40 at night, 50 at night. It was just great. And you could smell the freshly mown grass. The sprinklers would be on. And it would just gently coax you out of bed. You get dressed. You'd have to finish your chores. Maybe you had to mow the lawn in the morning first thing, and you'd race out the door. The day would be usually mine because on those days that I didn't have to work as a kid, we'd just go out. Both my parents were working, and you'd just go out, and the day was completely yours. And you'd hear, you didn't close the door. You just let go of the screen door, and with that giant spring up at top, just slap the front of the house. I love the smell of lilacs because they remind me of that time, and they'd just fill your nostrils with that great smell until I would clog up from allergies, mainly from the lawn that I had just mowed. If we could scrounge up a quarter, we'd walk or we'd take our bike to the A&W root beer place, and we'd have a cold, frosty mug of root beer. If we were really fortunate and feeling like we were wealthy, somehow or another, we could scrape up enough change to make a dollar. We could get a Mama Burger, but the Papa Burger was far too expensive. And then that hot summer day turned into a warm summer night. Sometimes we could convince our parents to let us sleep outside, which of course would lead to middle of the night ghost stories or talking about girls. And I don't know, have you talked to her? Does she like me? Do you know? What's your friend say? Even though you had absolutely no chance of ever talking to any of the girls, you talked about the girls a lot. And perhaps some would play, you know, like Ding Dong Ditch or something. You know, I wouldn't know what that was, but it's a different world now. 500 channels on TV. Every movie in the world available on demand on your TV, your computer, your phone. Texting at the dinner table. Our kids don't even look at each other anymore, let alone go outside and play. This summer, Rafe is helped with a gate, stripping it down, and now we're working on the fence around the cows. And I was so proud of him that he wanted to work. Actually, he didn't want to work. He just wanted the money. But that's a step in the right direction. At least he knows he has to work to earn the money. I got a job when I was 8 years old. Probably earlier than that, but I know for sure by 8 I was working. 1972, I was working in my dad's bakery. And we didn't have to work every day during the summer, just most days during the summer. I have to work in the afternoons, and I would go down in the late afternoon, and I would have to clean the pots and pans and scrape the floor and clean everything up once Dad stopped. And then I'd go home, and I got $1.60. I'll never forget. It was $1.60 an hour, and that was huge money. That was minimum wage. My sister would get paid more as we got older. My sisters also worked out in the front of the bakery, but as they got old enough, they could get a job someplace else if they wanted. And as soon as my sister turned 18, she drove a big Peaviner. And we lived in the Skagit Valley, and we had tulips and peas and all kinds of stuff, and the Peaviners would go out. They were these gigantic machines. And I remember thinking my sister was so cool because she could drive one of those. And then late, we would go to my grandparents' house and we would pick berries. They had a raspberry farm. Now kids aren't doing this. The latest stats are that in 1986, 57% of Americans age 16 to 19 were employed. Almost 60%, whether they were working at the Dairy Queen or the A&W, 60% were employed. And it stayed over 50% until 2002. But again, something in America changed after 9/11. By last July, only 36% were working. Now, there's a couple of reasons for this. One of the reasons is in 1986, only 12% of teenagers were going to a summer school. And quite honestly, summer school was for dummies. When I was growing up, you went to summer school. Ooh, wow, you had that many problems, huh? Now summer school, the numbers have risen to 42%. So almost half of the kids are going to summer school. And a lot of these are because they're going to college and they want to get ahead. I think our we need summer school because our schools have failed us so horribly. I went and got a graphic novel for my son this weekend. I've been trying to get him to read some of the classics, and he just will not read the classics. They're hard. I don't remember them being hard. You know, you read Frankenstein or, you know, even Dracula, anything. And now the action is so slow. It takes so long. It was all about the story. Now it's action, 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 action. That they get bored. I have not been able to. I tried to read Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde to him this summer. He just wouldn't sit for it. So I went to the Barnes & Noble and I got the graphic novels. And they're true to the story. Well, he read Dr. Jekyll. He read Frankenstein and Dracula on Saturday. And now said, I really want to read them. Dad, Frankenstein isn't anything like I thought. I know, son. I've been telling you that. So now I think you have to go to summer school. But where do you get a job? The other reason why kids aren't working anymore is because there are more people that are older that are working. And this, I think, is for two reasons. One, they know their pensions aren't coming true. They have to work. Many of them don't want to work. But also, I don't know about you, but I don't want to retire when I'm 65. 65 used to be old. 65 isn't old. I don't want to retire. What are you going to do? Shuffle around? Die? Go play golf? I know there's a lot of people going, yes, Glenn, I'm going to go play golf. Play golf now. My father wanted to play golf. He waited his whole life. You know, one day I'm going to retire. I'm going to play golf. By the time he retired, he couldn't play golf. His body was too destroyed. He retired. He couldn't wait to retire. He went back to work. He was bored out of his mind. The other reason why kids aren't working is because the minimum wage. When the minimum wage goes up and there's unemployment and people that have experience that want to work, businesses don't hire the kids that they have to train on what work is all about. They generally go to the people who have experience and know what work is all about, and they'll hire them because they're more dependable. Now, what's happening in Seattle? Remember, Seattle, we were told that Seattle, the minimum wage, it's going to be great for everybody. Well, apparently it's not. And I'm going to share with you something from the University of Washington. Not exactly a conservative, you know, bastion. What are they saying is happening to Seattle? And what is happening in Seattle? You're not going to be surprised, but everybody on the left is shocked. We'll give that to you here in just a second. Now, this ProFlowers has come out with the ultimate solution to ensure that you remember the dates that matter, your wife's birthday, your anniversary, your mother's, your mother-in-law's birthday. You do not want to forget these things, but you've got enough to worry about. ProFlowers has come up with their brand new Pro Gifter service. Now, this is the easiest fail-proof way to never forget an event that you're supposed to remember. Pro Gifter allows you to schedule three bouquet deliveries, same or different, to three different addresses up to 1 year in advance. Now, they can be the same addresses, they can be the same person, doesn't matter, but three deliveries during the year. You get three bouquets with the vases and the free shipping for $99. Now, that's going to save you $70. If you do all three at the same time, you're going to save $70 on this. And you don't have to worry about it again. You're going to look thoughtful. Like, you know, you should just do one that just is sent out just thinking of you, sweetheart. For no reason whatsoever. Oh, my gosh, you're going to look so thoughtful. Just pray that you're not, you know, having a fight. Or maybe it's better that you're having a fight. And this could work out for you. proflowers.com. Go to proflowers.com right now and look for the Pro Gifter banner right on the homepage. Pick your flowers, set the delivery dates, and you're done. That's proflowers.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I love this from 538. Seattle's minimum wage hike may have gone too far. No. It can't be.
Come on.
Stop
and by the way,
it.
The research doesn't even cover the full increase. It only covers it to $13 an hour, not even to $15 an hour. So if they went too far for 13, can you imagine what this is going to look like when the next elevation comes?
Listen to this. As cities across the country push for minimum wages at untested heights in recent years, some economists began to ask, how high is too high? Seattle, with the highest in-country minimum wage, may have hit that limit. January 2016, Seattle minimum wage jumped from $11 an hour to $13 for large employers, the second big increase in less than a year. New research released Monday by a team of economists at the University of Washington. There's not a socialist that is an unemployed teacher as long as the University of Washington is still open. There's a socialist without a job. Quick, get him to the university. They suggest the wage hike may have come at a significant cost. Now, this is, I want you to know, this is unexpected. The increase led to steep declines in unemployment for low-wage workers, a drop of hours for those who kept their jobs. Crucially, the negative impact of lost jobs and hours more than offset the benefits of the higher wages. On average, low-wage workers earned $125 a month less because of the higher wage, a small but significant decline. Oh, I don't know. $125 if I'm working minimum wage is not a small and insignificant decline.
No, it is. It says a significant. The other thing I would mention too is, Glenn, you said a decline in unemployment unintentionally. It is a decline in employment. It is a decline in employment.
Yes.
It's important to note.
Yes. The goal of this policy was to deliver higher incomes to people who were struggling to make ends meet in the city. Now, could we please go back into the audio vault and find when we were having this debate on the air? And I would like a highlight reel of us saying this is exactly what is going to happen. Exactly. We mentioned all of these. Now they need a university to say, this is what's happening. This is kind of unexpected. We didn't really see this one coming. We thought this was... you know, we didn't learn this in school. Of course, we haven't been teaching, you know, the free market by any stretch of the imagination. So we don't really know what was going to happen. But this doesn't look good. They note in this article, this is not peer reviewed yet. They're going to get some peers to review and say, oh, no, University of Washington, they didn't understand the fluffamagug, which is a theory that changes everything. And we'll get into that here in a second.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Hello, hello, America. There is a lot going on. Especially with the Supreme Court. We'll get to an in-depth look at all of this on tomorrow, but I want to give you the update. It looks like we could have, as early as today, a retirement announcement from Kennedy. Justice Kennedy, remember, was appointed by Ronald Reagan. He was supposed to be a great conservative, and they never turn out that way. But he has been important on some things for the conservatives. He has been good on, I believe, guns and the free market, but he is the guy who penned the majority opinion for gay marriage. So he has gone, he's been undependable for either side. He has gone back and forth. If we can get a real conservative in there, it will be fantastic because it will make the court solidly and dependably conservative at this point. If you get three to retire, then conservatives have changed the face of America for quite some time. Although I don't believe that we could do the greatest work, the hardest work ever, unless we listen to people like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, we're not going to get conservatives in there. We still have yet to see Gorsuch, but we're hoping that Gorsuch is a change in what has been the usual pattern from the Reagans and the Bushes. Now, there's a couple of really big stories coming out of the court today because they are going to take a couple of cases. First, there is a gay wedding cake controversy. Do you know which case this is, Stu?
Sorry, say it one more time. I was just reading another update.
Yeah, the gay wedding cake.
Yeah, it's the one in Colorado. I can give you the name here if you can.
Masterpiece Cake Shop.
Yeah, yes, Masterpiece.
That's right. What happened, Pat, in that one? I don't remember.
Let's see. The lower court had ruled that Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, violated Colorado's public accommodations law, which prohibits refusing service to customers based on factors such as race, sex, marital status. Again, it's the same type as the one in Oregon, because he refused to do the wedding cake. He didn't refuse to sell them cakes.
Right. So you could walk in and buy something off the shelf.
Yeah. But he just didn't want to participate in their event.
Okay.
But apparently you have to.
This is game changing. I believe this is as game changing as the Commerce Clause. And most people don't understand what the Commerce Clause is, but the clause that really changed everything is in the Constitution, and it's really pretty meaningless, or at least it was as it was written. It basically said if there's interstate commerce, then the federal government gets to rule when there's trouble. And that's because the states were fighting against each other, and they were really basically 13 original countries, and that's how they were behaving. They had their own currency, they had their own banking, they had their own laws, and so the federal government said, look guys, just to avoid war between the 13 colonies, if it's interstate commerce, then we'll regulate that so we make sure that it's fair across all states. Well, FDR took that clause and brought it to his court and said, we'd like you to make this stronger, because people were selling wheat. Farmers were selling wheat and doing their own trade. And so what they said was, well, now, wait a minute. Even if you bake your own bread and you grow your own wheat, even if you do that and bake your own bread and you're using it yourself, there are perhaps seeds that are coming across state lines for you to be able to replant. There are other things that you might use that are pesticides that are coming. And even just the pollination of your field going into another state allows the United States government to regulate. So now everything is regulated by the United States government, where it was very rare that states had the federal government regulations, and that changed everything. This cake controversy could change everything in America, because we have had a rule of religious freedom, and I can't be a bigot and say I'm not serving any gay people, but When you're asked to use your art, whether that's a photographer or a decorator or whatever, a baker that is using their art. My father used to do wedding cakes on Saturdays. All he would do were wedding cakes. And I know the hours and hours and hours that he spent. And I know how he thought about the couple, and he worked with the couple, and he was part of it, and he was excited to hear about how the couple's wedding went and how their reception was and what the response was with the cake, because he poured his heart into it. Well, that's using your talent and your skills. And many bakers, some don't, but many bakers will think, well, I'm now participating in your wedding, and My religion says that I shouldn't be doing that. I'll sell you anything off the shelf. It's not a problem, but I can't participate in that. Now, not everybody who's religious feels that way, but some do. How can the government force them to go against what they truly believe? That's the question. And the problem with this is we used to be clear with conscientious objectors. When I have this argument with people and say, look, I don't know what my dad would have done. My dad might have made cakes. He might not have. I don't know. But my dad wasn't a real deeply religious person. He was a deeply spiritual person. So how was he going to interpret that? I don't know. But a deeply religious person who goes to a church and they say, this is what we believe. You can't force them to do that. That's like taking the Amish Jehovah's Witness also don't believe in armed conflict. That's what they're taught in church. Our standard has always been, if that is truly your religion, you can't use it as an excuse. Even if we find it deplorable for some reason, you got to serve or you don't have to serve.
And that included, that was up to and including using peyote, mm-hmm. which is against the law.
Yes.
But Native Americans said that was part of their religious belief and they won that case. So
look at Hacksaw, not Hacksaw Ridge, Chains. Is it Hacksaw
Ridge? Well, that's
Ridge?
Right, Hacksaw.
It is Hacksaw Ridge. Hacksaw Ridge, that's the story in World War II. Where you're fighting Hitler and evil, and a guy mm-hmm. who lives in the Carolinas and believes that I was raised as a pacifist. I cannot kill, but I'll go and serve as a medic. And he was brutalized in boot camp for it. He becomes one of the greatest heroes in American history, but we didn't force him to do what was against his moral and religious framework. We can't. Or the First Amendment means nothing. The travel ban.
Yeah, this is a big one in that they weren't sure if the Supreme Court was going to take it. They are going to take that case, so I think it's going to be argued in October. My initial reading of this, and a lot of these things are confusing because it's all legalistic language, but it seems like they are going to lift the injunction against the travel ban so that it can kind of go into effect until it's decided. At least most of it would go into effect. So
yeah, they're not hearing all of it, right? They're only hearing parts of it.
Yeah, and I know right for the injunction specifically, only parts of it are going to be lifted. So it's not going to affect every single group. The details we're going to have to get into tomorrow because it's just kind of breaking as we speak. Although I would assume you'll be seeing this on a particular Twitter feed at some point today.
Let's
be seen as at least a short-term victory.
Let's make sure that we talk to some really good attorneys as we're preparing this for tomorrow so we really get it right. Because on the travel ban, you know, the real argument is, doesn't the president have a right to, isn't that part of his job description to keep us safe and to watch immigration? I mean, it's always been in the president's purview to be able to do this. And so let's have somebody get real specific so we know exactly what they're hearing and what the problem is and what other people are saying. So we'll have that tomorrow. There's one other thing that I want to bring up, the travel ban. It's interesting to me that he's doing the travel ban. When you look at this, Donald Trump is very good at speaking the language of his tribe, the people who follow him. And the travel ban is very important, not just to people who are looking at countries and saying, why are we letting people in that we don't know if they're dangerous or not? And until we find a way to actually screen people that makes common sense, maybe we should hold off here for a second. But I think Donald Trump is upping this, and he spoke volumes to his tribe. He has broken, this is the way this is written. Donald Trump breaks with tradition. White House forgoes Ramadan dinner. Did you read this?
No.
The president and First Lady Melania released a statement on Saturday wishing warm greetings to those celebrating, what is it, Eid, an important holiday marking the end of Ramadan. Muslims in the United States join those around the world during a holy month of Ramadan to focus on acts of faith and charity. Now, as we commemorate Eid with family and friends, they carry on the tradition of helping neighbors and breaking bread with people from all walks of life. This is the first time now in three presidents that we have not had a Ramadan dinner. So when you think of the White House's breaking tradition, you don't think of the tradition that was started by Clinton. I mean, breaking with tradition, that's three presidents have had a Ramadan dinner. Now a fourth president says no. So it's a new tradition. And I don't know how I feel about it.
And the LGBT community is doing the same thing on Trump's lack of releasing some sort of, I guess every year Obama released a press release for the gay pride parade. Trump didn't do that. So he's breaking with tradition, too. Tradition so, that started with the last president?
It started with the last president.
That's
if you want to talk about this.
Come on.
If you really want to go there, then Barack Obama, he didn't. But he was claiming he was going to break tradition of starting wars in foreign lands. Because that's what the last president did.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's funny. This exact same way they're tweeting or they're treating the healthcare issue, which is the only thing that we should measure this on is the current, very recently implemented failing program. That is the only fair standard to even look at. We don't look at what we had before 2008 or the century before that. We can only look at what we have right now, which was implemented, that was forced through and incredibly unpopular the entire time.
It is failing miserably.
And it's failing miserably.
Look, here's the thing. Here's the case that we need to make as conservatives over and over again, because we have to speak the language of the left and argue where the argument is. And where the argument is on healthcare is care. And I care. I want to make sure that people are not suffering. I want to make sure that we take care of the people who can't afford it. I want to make sure that there is healthcare available for everybody. And I don't want somebody on the streets dying of cancer. Well, let me just say this. The regulations are so uncaring. The regulations are so inhuman. And beyond that, I care about all of the families. Now we have taken a group of people who were suffering and not really done much for them. And then we've made the rest of the country suffer with 140% increase in their premiums. This is, if we would have sold this as care, you got to care, but it's going to cost you 140% more. We all would have said no. We have to change the argument. And we have to say, let's care for the people who are in Ohio. Let's care for the people, the moms and dads who are not on the poverty line. This cannot afford 140% increase. It's unreasonable. Now this, stock market is booming. Why? I believe that's inflation. The people who have the money are chasing too few goods on the stock market. What's your gut say? That this is going to go to 30,000, or it's more likely to go to 15,000 or maybe 10. Jim Rogers says within 2 years, the world is going to experience the biggest market crash since the Great Depression. I've talked to Bill several times. He's not the guy who says it gives a date. He has not said that in the past. There's an exclusive report now on the five threats to the economy, to our financial markets, and it was written by David Stockman, President Reagan's budget director. You can get it for free by calling 866-465-3546. Also, Goldline is extending their price protection programs. Find out about it right now, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Buy gold now from the people I trust, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck.
Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can. Yay! Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's television show. To reserve your seat, email tickets at glennbeck.com with your information. That's tickets at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
I think last time Brad Thor was on, I think we almost threw him off the air.
Yeah,
guys,
I think so.
The guy is, I mean, he's not shy. He joins us next.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. So glad that you are here. Oh, there's still a lot to cover. North Korea used drugs to torture the 20-something-year-old in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was drugged and tortured to death. Now, how are we going to respond? Also, more people are stirring the fire. Bill Nye, the Science Guy, one of his writers on his Netflix show, tweeted something horrible. Try this. If a few old-ass conservative white men have to die in order to get this gun control issue discussed, that's just a risk I'm willing to take. Excuse me? When somebody from The Blaze, Michael Opelka tweeted her and said, listen to this, how do you define old? She knew she was going to be in trouble and she removed the tweet. This is Bill Nye, the Science Guy's writer. We'll get into that here in a second. Also, witches are casting disturbing binding spells against Donald Trump as part of the, quote, resistance. We'll talk about that. That's a story on theblaze.com and glennbeck.com as well. We'll get to that. But first, the one, the only, the never controversial Brad Thor, right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Brad Thor is going to be joining us here in just a second. I thought he was on tomorrow's show. Are we sure he's on today? I was hoping it was tomorrow because I haven't finished his book, and I read like half of it. I took it someplace with me while I was in the great outdoors, and I must have dropped it someplace in the middle of the ranch someplace. So the cows are reading something really great. It's a great book. The first half is really good. Could suck the second half. I don't know.
Well,
but
I mean,
the first half is tremendous.
And let's be honest, it's really up to Brad Thor to supply a book to each one of your locations. So he really
isn't it though.
Yeah, I mean, what's he doing?
Well, here's the deal. I tried to find a bookstore. Impossible. I tried in two states. I tried in Idaho and I tried in Montana, and I couldn't find a bookstore. And then I realized that the book wasn't out yet. It comes out tomorrow. So I couldn't have bought it anyway, even if I found a bookstore. I should have probably checked that first. But should we go into, as we wait for Brad Thor, should we go into the witches that are now casting spells on Donald Trump?
Yeah.
I don't know where to go with this story.
On Donald and all those who abet him. So
yes.
It's not just Donald Trump.
So here it is. Large Facebook group composed of self-described witches cast spells to bind President Trump and all those who abet him. On Wednesday, you know, abet is a word I haven't really seen around since maybe 1626. on Wednesday, a large Facebook group composed of the self-described witches began to cast the spells. The group, which calls itself Bind Trump, has more than 2,000 members, although it's unclear exactly how many participated in the event. On the night of the alleged binding ceremony, dozens posted pictures and videos of their anti-Trump rituals. We have got to see the videos.
They've been doing this since March.
Can you get us the audio of that? And maybe, Stu, could you look in to perhaps a warlock? It wasn't Bill Rogers. Do you guys remember Bill Rogers?
Oh, yeah.
He used to be on the show a long time ago. Let's see, because I believe he was some sort of a warlock or something. Maybe we get him on to unbind the spells tomorrow.
It's an interesting...
I don't know.
According to the witches, too, a binding spell is different than a curse or a hex. So,
you would know, Jeffy. What is a binding spell?
I don't quite know the difference. I'm just saying that's what the witches have said.
Okay, so here, the witches' event was scheduled to correspond with the waning crescent moon, and the group's members used a organized liturgy to wish evil on Trump's agenda. The participants were instructed to gather a number of components to aid them in their efforts, including a tarot card reader, an unflattering picture of Donald Trump. I don't know why can't you use a nice picture of Donald Trump? Is the queen of all witches up in heaven going? I mean, I don't mean to insult witches. I don't know what your practice is exactly, but do they like?
No, it's got to be an unflattering picture. This one makes me feel good.
They're supposed to have candles, a small bowl of water, an ashtray, or a dish of sand, and a feather. Now, it sounds like something that you shouldn't take seriously, but have I ever struck you as the guy that doesn't take stuff like this seriously? No.
No.
No. No. They were instructed to call on spirits and demons of the infernal realms to bind Trump so that his malignant works may fail utterly. They want to prevent him from harming humans, trees, animals, and, quote, rocks from harm. Now, I'm glad somebody has finally brought this up. But the amount of rocks that this administration has harmed is...
It's well into the millions already.
And it's
millions
untold.
Millions of rocks have been harmed.
It's an untold, sad tale of how some rocks are pried from their family in what we haphazardly have just named gravel pits. And their family members are ripped and sent to other driveways, sometimes halfway across the country, for those rock families never to be united again.
Tragic.
And who's responsible for this?
Donald Trump.
He's a builder.
Donald Trump.
How much gravel has he used in his life? The harm of the rock families must stop. Must stop. Sometimes he grinds stones into smaller stones.
It's happened, like, oh. Yeah, it's happened.
Imagine if somebody took your children and ground them up into smaller children. Would you be happy?
No, I wouldn't. No,
if they took your family,
I really
and ground
don't know
your family up.
Rocks have children or families,
and sprinkled them. Please, Pat, stop with the denials. And they took and ground your children up and then sprinkled them in some
like
driveway.
It.
Your kids
I would not
were,
like it.
Were what the Prius tires were driving on here in California. No, you wouldn't be happy. The witches also condemn those who enable Trump's wickedness. They need to have their towers of vanity struck down. That's the only thing that actually makes sense to me is strike down the towers of vanity. Afterward, the witches were instructed, ground yourself by having a good hearty laugh. Jump up and down, clap your hands, stomp your feet, have a bite to eat. Grounding is very important. Don't neglect it. And remember, he hates people laughing at him.
According to Daniel Asor, who's a rabbi in Israel, he said people should not take these kinds of ceremonies lightly. He said witchcraft, or its real name, Satanism, is explicitly
power struggle, which is why it's so readily dragged into politics. Satanism, in its essence, pits the adversary against God.
Even if you're a good witch?
There are no good witches. Glinda, didn't you see Wicked? Glinda was not a good witch. That is a true live documentary that is happening in New York, of all places. They've decided to expose the truth about that so-called good witch.
What about Bewitched? She seemed like a generally a good witch.
And what happened to her?
Yeah. I don't know.
Dead.
Is she?
Yeah. What happened to her? What happened to her husband? Her first husband that we all know suddenly changed features? All of a sudden, Dagwood or Darewood or whatever his name was. Remember, all of a sudden, he looked one way, and then we were all supposed to notice she hadn't fundamentally changed him. She killed him and replaced him, and the spell didn't work on me. I knew it was a different guy. She's
wow.
evil.
You are. Yeah. You really do go deep. These are deep dives.
Like I said, not a lot of people are giving you this kind of analysis on the witch thing. I actually agree with the rabbi. I don't take this lightly at all. I mean, I don't know how many of the 2,000 people are serious. This is kind of like the Secret Grove or what is that place called in
Bohemian
California?
Bohemian Grove.
Oh, Bohemian Grove. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Bohemian Grove. I don't think, you know, I wrote about it in my book, The Eye of Moloch. In it's a fiction novel. Better than Brad Thor's, I think, quite honestly. In fact, I could do an interview about that now if you'd like. But I wrote about it in my book, The Eye of Moloch. And I explained how I believe some of this stuff works, but I did it in a fiction sort of setting. And, you know, the Bohemian Grove does exist. And all of these people do come from all over the world, all these high leaders. And they do apparently do this old owl thing where they, you know, set it on fire or set a little boat on fire with little people in it. No actual little people were harmed. And there's these little figures that they put in it. And then they, I don't know, set them on fire and throw them in the belly of the owl or something weird. I don't think anybody there takes that seriously. Maybe a couple of people. There might be, I don't know, 1,000 people there. Maybe 2 really understand that that is an ancient ritual and take it seriously. The rest are just having a party and they're just, oh, this is funny. Oh, there's nothing to this. They don't have any intention. They don't even know what it means. They don't care. But they are performing an ancient ritual. And the same, I believe, with the witches. I'm not a witch hunter. I don't, you know, I'm sure there are good witches. I'm sure there are people that are, you know, just witches and they just care about the environment and whatever witches do. They don't fly on broomsticks or any of that nonsense. But I do believe things like this, you are performing ancient pagan rituals that I do believe do play into the adversary, do play into darkness. And I don't think we should take these things lightly. Although I don't think Donald Trump at any point is going to be bound or turn into a newt. But that's just me. Our sponsor this half hour is My Patriot Supply. Friday, North Korea made its first statement since the death of Otto Warmbier. Quote, to make clear, we are the biggest victim of this incident. Now, we're going to get into this later, but they use drugs. This is the latest from Fox News. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer believes North Korea's repeated use of drugs killed the American student. Quote, he was tortured. Not so much the way, pulling fingernails out with tools, but repeated drugging, sodium pentothal. Schaefer told the Fox Business Network, the retired U.S. general said North Korea was trying to figure out whether Warmbier was a CIA spy, and repeated exposure to drugs during that year in captivity is what caused brain damage. I think during his confinement, they overdid it and thought, uh-oh, we better release him. No doubt they kind of saw that the things that they were doing were going tragically wrong. We better get this guy out of here And so it served their purpose to get him out. So now how does the president respond to this? You can't have an American citizen tortured and killed by North Korea. I don't know, but I know that information is important, and we are proud to have as a sponsor My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is really a home for people who believe that by prepping, by staying in touch with the news, by not buying into conspiracy theories or anything else, but by really truly being prepared mentally, physically, and with things like food and currency, that they're able to enjoy life. They're able to not worry about things like this as much as others who aren't prepared. Right now, they are offering their 102-serving survival food kit this week for only $99. That's less than a dollar per serving. Go to preparewithglenn.com. The world, I am telling you now, you wake up on a Monday, by Friday, you don't recognize your country. Right now, I don't recognize my country. But stories like this haven't really hit yet. Stories of economic depression and collapse, or stories of real, true global war have not hit yet, but they are coming. Prepare yourself and then let it go. Preparewithglenn.com. Preparewithglenn.com. 800-200-7163. 800-200-7163. Preparewithglenn.com.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
888-727 back.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
So we had Brad on the phone, and then my very efficient staff said, "Let's do tomorrow." No. I really wanted to give him hell for being late. I mean, when you're on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, how many times does it happen halfway through the time when you were supposed to be on? Jimmy is just ad-libbing about something he doesn't know anything about, just stalling until the guest finally stumbles out from behind the curtain and is like, "Ah, hey, sorry, I missed half the interview time." Happens all the time. And Brad Thor just stumbled out from behind the curtain about 5 minutes ago. I was like, "Oh, sorry, I was doing something." So tomorrow we'll make sure to give him a very fair and gentle airing as he joins us on tomorrow's program. So
he'll get the respect he deserves, I think, is the way what you're trying to say.
Oh, my gosh. If he was smart, he would have come on and said, "Well, you only read half of my book and then lost it. So I lost your phone number and I thought I could just do half of the interview."
Don't give him the outs on the air. Let him come up with
now that I just did. That won't work. That won't work. But it should be very interesting to have him on tomorrow talking about his new book, which somehow or another I've misplaced. Brad Thor on tomorrow's program. Okay. I want to read this tweet to you. "If a few old-ass conservative white men have to die in order to get this gun control issue discussed, then I'm willing to take that risk." This is from a woman who says she's a comedy writer, and you can see it's so funny. She's a comedy writer for Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Oh, and if you've ever seen that show or a clip of that show, you know just how funny it is. It's hysterical.
Didn't know. Do you still have the song that they did? Remember the song on, what was it, on gender or something that had nothing to do with science at all? Really had very little to do with comedy and music, which was very difficult for a comedy song about gender. Having a song that didn't have anything to do with music, comedy, or gender, or at least science. She has taken this tweet down, but the best tweet of the weekend has to come from Steve Dace. Steve writes, "If you thought 2016 was bad, how about a 2018 election between a party embracing cultural Marxism and one that broke a 9-year promise to voters.
Mm. It's going to be ugly. I guess there's nobody to root for in these situations anymore.
So it's so true, too. I mean, who do you root for in that scenario? I don't know.
I mean,
certainly not the cultural Marxists. But then on the other hand, you vote for these guys and they don't do anything they said they were going to do. So
it's a game. You're watching a game with two teams you don't care about. I mean, mm-hmm. you might wind up having a little bit of a rooting interest in certain parts of it or whatever. But it's hard to have passion over this.
So somebody wrote to me this weekend, who you guys know, who said, I'm thinking about running and I don't know what to run as. I could run as GOP, could run as an independent, or could run as a libertarian. And I'm not sure because all of them have really not stood for what they were supposedly standing for. I don't know how to run if I am going to run. I'll give you my answer when we come back.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello from Los Angeles, California. And thrilled to be here. It was nice about 2 o'clock in the morning to be able to have the windows open and to be able to hear the gunshots that were just about 3-4 blocks away, which I thought was very nice.
That's a nice touch.
Well, it was nice. It was a little confusing because I said, that's gunshot. And my wife said, no, guns are illegal in California. And I said, you are right, sweetheart. You are right. That must have been people outside at night going bang that we heard or a backfiring of 15 to 20 cars, which was really exciting because guns not legal. So a couple of things going on. The gay pride parade continues to be more of a Trump resistant parade than a pride parade. If you saw one anywhere around you or you happen to attend one, you might have thought, wow, this seems kind of angry against Donald Trump, the most gay friendly president of all time.
At least when taking office, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think no.
The only one who's ever been elected on a platform of being okay with same-sex marriage.
Those are just words, and this is this is what really bothers me. No, you know that Barack Obama was pro-gay marriage. You know that he was, but he didn't have the fortitude to actually say it. He didn't have the moral underpinnings.
In fact, he said in, I think, 2008 or 2006, it was in there somewhere, that because he's a Christian, he believes that marriage is between a man and a woman.
2008. Donald Trump has not had that position, I don't think, ever.
Not that I know of.
Yeah. And so he has been consistent and a leading guy on this. Barack Obama lied to become president. He sold his people out.
Yeah.
The people who believed in him sold them out so he could become president.
Same with Hillary Clinton. She did the same thing.
Same thing. All of them on the left and I shouldn't say all of them, all of the politicians on the left, where Donald Trump has always been there, has always been gay friendly, if you will, I hate that phrase, but he has always been gay friendly. Think of this. Barack Obama didn't have the guts to say at the DNC convention that he was gay friendly. Instead, marriage is between man and a woman at the convention. Donald Trump, that's the Democratic convention. Donald Trump goes to the Republican convention and says that he supports gay marriage and yada, yada, yada. And the Republicans cheer. He's surprised by it and says, thank you. That means an awful lot. Yet they're protesting him. Are you kidding me?
Strange. And I think, initially he was okay with the transgender thing, going transgenders going to whatever bathroom they wanted to.
He said that all Trump places would be transgender friendly.
But then he removed the restriction of federal funds going to school districts in California for them to be able to go into whatever bathroom they wanted to, because it's a school. It's a
can't we just slow down? This is what all the comedians, all the lefty comedians are saying. You're overplaying your hand. Can't we just slow down a little bit just to have some data behind us?
And the answer
just
is no.
Just to know what this
the answer
means?
Is no.
Well, but this is this. I mean, if you have a Republican, that is Donald Trump. I mean, this is a huge win. If essentially the opposition to the LGBT activist is Donald Trump, like, has he backed off slightly on a couple of minor parts of Obama's agenda? I mean, you could maybe argue that, but I mean, it's not a strong argument. And that's why you're seeing there's a poll that came out today from Pew that showed the support for same-sex marriage. And I was looking at it, I was like, wow, you can see the kind of meteoric rise
of support
for it, which is kind of well-documented. However, I hadn't looked down at the bottom of the poll when I first looked at it, the graph, which shows the timeline, which is just since 2007. It's gone from 37 to 62 now, 62% support. In just 10 years.
Wow.
And that goes from across every age group, across every party, across every race.
Wow.
I mean, there's religious groups have all increased as well. It really is, meteoric, the rise.
I'm really trying to study how the human brain works. And Jonathan Haidt wrote this book called The Righteous Mind. And in it, he talks about how the mind works, but it's like an elephant and a rider. And this is an old theory. He just moves it forward some. But I was reading another book, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, where it talks about the elephant and the rider. And this is something that we really need to know as conservatives, because we're speaking the wrong language and we keep losing and we keep saying, well, our arguments are better, but the argument doesn't matter. And I know everybody wants to say, well, yes, it does. But I just want to remind you that it doesn't matter what you feel. It matters what the facts are. And the facts are that the left and the right speak a different language. And because of this, we don't hear each other. And so it's like a missionary going, to the Amazon or going to Mexico City and wanting to convert people and wanting to help people. But I refuse to speak Spanish. Well, you're not going to make an impact. What you're going to do is you're going to just start shouting at people going, no, it's Jesus. Oh, Jesus, he's right here. No, Jesus. And they don't understand. And then what? You walk around and go, these people are just dumb. They're stupid. They don't know what's best for them. You're speaking the wrong language. And it's harder to see because we're both speaking English. But the writer, this is, now listen, if you really understand this, you'll understand. There are so many levels of the language that we have to discuss, but the most basic is the elephant and the rider. The elephant is your gut. The elephant is your first reaction, your first impression. You know, they say, there's nothing like a first impression. It's true. Your first impression of a person it lays the foundation and the cornerstones of your gut of what you're going to think about that person. And it's very hard to change it. It can be changed, but it's very hard to change it. And believe me, I know, because I've seen this happen in my own life. So what you have to do is you have to understand that the elephant is the emotion center of a human. And it's your gut, it's fear, it's love, it's hope, it's all these emotions that you feel. The rider is reason. And just like a rider on an elephant, with a rope between his, teeth, you can try to steer that elephant. But if the emotion was so ingrained in this elephant. If it's already had its first impression, its third impression, and all of the emotions, you're not going to change its mind. So now, what happens? I know that when my daughter was in college, she went to Fordham University, and they taught her at a Catholic university that the Bible was false, that sodomy was just a greeting. It had nothing to do, literally, nothing to do with sex. It was just the way people greeted each other back in the old days.
What? Wait.
Oh, yeah, no.
That's not possible. That is not.
Yes, it is.
She misunderstood what was being taught in class.
No, she didn't.
I mean, come on.
No, she didn't. It was not like it is now. That's what it was. And so.
So a sex act was just, hey, hi. How you doing?
It's why they were going after the really? Visitors. It's why that's what she was
just trying to say hello.
University.
Come on out and say hi to us.
I could be a professor at this school.
Yeah, okay, so anyway, so she had that foundation put into her, and she was the peer pressure was if you're against gay marriage, you hate people.
Yeah, you're a bigot and a homophobe.
You're a bigot. And it was overwhelming in New York. It was overwhelming. And I have absolutely no record of ever hating any gay person. None. I have many gay friends that I love them. That's your life. My life is my life. Your life is your life. You may not agree with everything that I do and believe in my life, and I don't have to agree or do what everything you do in your life. You're not looking for my approval. We're friends. But the peer pressure was so strong. There's nothing I could say to change it. Ever. There was no reason that could break through. And all I kept saying was, honey, that's not who I am. You know that's not who I am. And because that conflict, I think, was so deep in her that we couldn't even talk about it. She wouldn't talk about it until she started to see, wait a minute. Now that it's passed, now people are trying to force people to, you know, accept that in their church and it's not about just let's leave everybody alone. Why do you hate so much? It really is about forcing an agenda on somebody else. That took years and I couldn't solve it. And I didn't know how to solve it. Here's the thing. If we don't understand that emotions play the biggest role and emotional stories, and especially when it comes to, when it comes to the question of gay marriage, love wins. And that's true. Love conquers all. And that's the way they framed it. And so you can't talk about anything else except love, because that's the overriding, most powerful emotion you can find. And the elephant is already on the road, and no amount of reason will pull it off. We have to look at the questions that we're debating now and understand that unless you speak the language of the left, which is generally care and harm, oppression, if you can't speak about a subject you want to talk about, abortion, don't talk about the sanctity of life. They don't think that way. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing. Just like we don't think of abortion as oppression of women, they do. That doesn't make them bad or us bad. It just is. It's Spanish and English. And unless we can start making our arguments about care and about oppression, we are not able to win. That's why we keep saying we have the best arguments. We're making them in a different language. And arguments appeal to the rider. We have to appeal to the elephant. Boy, without context, this monologue makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're like, well, wait, you're I have like, to appeal to the what? Elephant?
What? I was what glad that they were banned from the circus. What the hell happened here? And now this. Gun lovers, listen up. Huge announcement that you're not going to want to miss. The USCCA is ending the month of June by giving away a different gun every single day. You can win a brand new gun every day this week, but it all ends June 30th at midnight. I want you to go right now to protectanddefend.com to reveal which gun you're going to take home tomorrow. Maybe it's a 9/11. As I said, the Kimber, I want a new Kimber. To find out, just go to protectanddefend.com right now. The gun of the day disappears at midnight. Every day, a brand new gun goes to somebody in this audience. It might as well be you. Go to protectanddefend.com right now. Get the official rules and get entered to win a new gun every day this week. You can find out all about it and just register to win at protectanddefend.com. That's protectanddefend.com. Win your gun today. Right now. Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Do you guys see what happened with Transformers this weekend?
I mean, the number one movie in the country?
Yeah, it didn't do well here. I mean, comparatively speaking.
In China, it was gigantic.
Yeah.
Double
what it was here.
Yeah.
So.
Now, has anybody seen it yet?
Yeah.
Jeffy has.
I enjoyed it.
I have not seen it, although I'm intrigued because of the historical element you were talking about. That sounds kind of fun. Yeah,
what's
fun.
The opposite of intrigued? Is the, that's
not. Yeah.
Well, that's you don't like any of these.
I like the first Transformers. I thought it was.
So
all right.
Look, so the Transformers. Here's my real deal in Transformers. I can't take, because I have a 13-year-old son who I'm trying to. I can't take the Transformers with the woman sitting on the motorcycle and revving the engine, and she's like, oh yeah, I can't take it.
Me are they doing either. That in this one too?
Boy, Glenn, do I know what
no,
you're
they
about.
Don't do that.
Okay.
They don't no, do they that don't. In this. Right. So there's one reason as a dad, not as a man or a boy. I mean, a 13-year-old boy in me always loves that. But as a dad, no, please. It's been hard for me to be able to take Rafe and go, hey, this is a fun movie, because I, you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. The historic element in it, I think, was fun. And if you go into it as a Transformer movie, you're like, oh, this is kind of fun. Now, you go into it as an adult and you see that it says Dark Universe. It's the new Universal thing. And you know they're trying to make all these movies with... you know, The Mummy and all of these things. It, you understand what they're doing, and they're doing exactly what DC Comics is doing, trying to jam everything in into one thing, and it just is. It was stupid. It was just stupid to wait a minute. I'm confusing movies. Wow, I just conflated two movies together. Right. Sorry about that. I'll reset and give it to you tomorrow. It was an okay movie.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.